So I am sitting here with Shannon Lohr, who's the founder of Factory 45. And this conversation has been in the works for a long time. And I'm actually really excited about it because I've been thinking a lot about sustainable fashion and how products are being made right now and how easy it is to make product. But I don't know if it's not as easy to make sustainable product. So I'm really excited to have her on. So Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Sarah, thank you for having me.
And you have like such a fascinating story in the sustainable fashion world and just going into your background. You worked as a consultant for crowdfunding projects and have kind of done all these different things. I'd love to kind of let you introduce yourself and talk about Revolution and Factory 45 and how you kind of decided to create Factory 45.
Yeah, so I guess we can go back about 10 years, over 10 years to so 2010. I was starting, really, I was like a recent college grad. I had just spent 2 years bartending my way around the world, like basically, in other words, like just avoiding getting a quote unquote real job or sitting in an office. And a friend who I, an American girl who I had met bartending in Australia, reached out and she said, I know you're not gonna get a real job. Let's do something just to keep traveling." And so we ended up flying down to Central America. We were researching and visiting organic cotton farms and learning Spanish. And we thought we were gonna start a fair trade import-export business. And then we realized, whoa, that we would be way over our heads with that. So we started designing a line of 10 pieces that could be mixed and matched to create over 100 different looks. The idea was it was a traveling wardrobe for minimalists and backpackers like ourselves. So often you hear entrepreneurs end up creating products that they themselves need or want. That's exactly what we did. And we flew back to the States and we decided if we were going to do this, we were going to do it with people and planet in mind and do it in a sustainable way possible. And so that is a more long-winded version of the story, but that took us into launching Revolution Apparel. And then it led me into what I do today.
Amazing. And even just like being able to take your passion for travel and people and kind of roll it up into helping people figure out how do I make better products? How do we try to like make a small dent in this in the I mean the fashion industry is huge. It's
Yeah,
huge.
huge.
So something I've been seeing is that like a lot of these bloggers either do collabs with Nordstrom's or they're creating these products that they're selling on their websites and they're utilizing factories. But I can think of this one particular influencer who has like the best intention. I did end up buying her pajamas, which I do love, but they're terrible quality. Like terrible, like holes in them already. They were very expensive, but I wanted to support her small business. And so I bought them because like, women supporting women. But I was
Yeah.
just thinking like if more people, specifically like more of these bloggers and influencers like utilize your courses, we could actually create more sustainable and better and ultimately better quality fashion that makes a difference and is more impactful than just supporting women. Like, we want to support women and create better products at the same time.
Well, not to mention, like, the majority of our clothes in the world is sewn by women being paid not a living wage. Some of it is slave labor. So you talk about like supporting women. Let's go all the way back to the beginning of the supply chain and really support women.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, and this is something also that I'm seeing a lot of brands speak to. I was just talking to someone who works at Bombas, and they were saying how supply chain has gotten really, really tricky because, well, now this situation has sort of unearthed itself in China about a certain area where cotton is being collected, where they're using basically modern slavery tactics, and now every brand is trying to get out of there, but that is like the main supplier of cotton. Like that area is the main supplier of cotton in China. And so it's just sort of created all these complications. What has sort of been your take on that, and how can companies like avoid avoid modern slavery, looking for certain certifications? What has been your experience?
I think that I have been in the kind of unique position where my emphasis has been on localization from the beginning. So even starting my own brand, like we were at our factory, we were at our supplier, we knew the sources, like transparency was so important. And that is something that I really try to drive home in Factory 45. Factory 45 is the online business school that takes sustainable fashion brands from idea to launch. I've been running it since 2014. And we talk about, you know, really trying to figure out your supply chain as local to where you live as possible, not only for transparency, but just for like ease of being a first-time entrepreneur or a first-time brand, not having to fly over to China, go to the farm, like all those things that are so important. If you really, really do care about, you know, improving the fashion industry and being part of the solution, then you cannot avoid visiting your suppliers. It just has to be something that is a given. And again, keeping it local is one way to really make that an easier process on yourself.
And, you know, there has been a huge push towards localization in the past few years, especially with the export tax abroad, especially in China. And, you know, are you seeing like an increase in American factories? Where are these sort of hubs that people should be paying attention to? Like, obviously, if you're in, you know, I'm in Connecticut, I don't even know where I would start to look for someone who could make pajamas, like we were just talking about in my example. Like, where would you suggest even starting?
Yeah, I mean, so you would go to probably New York or North Carolina. We really underestimate the amazing and very important work that sewers and textile workers are doing in North Carolina specifically. Like the textile belt of America was booming, right? Like many years ago, but it's still alive and well. There are people running cooperative style factories where all of the employees get a piece of the profit, you know, a piece of the revenue. And that's where I think, you know, it's a little bit like, gosh, like market yourself better so we know about these things, but also like they're just focused on creating really good products and doing their work. And so maybe marketing isn't, they have enough work. They don't need, you know, they're not focused on marketing. But back to your original question, it's not so much like made in the USA is the best and it's better. It's more about like, if you're, like you said, you're in Connecticut, where can you go? But that is not to say there is not, you know, quote unquote sweatshop labor happening in Los Angeles. It does happen. It happens in New York. So again, it's more about being able to be feet on the ground, in the door, asking the questions, talking to the sewers, talking to the project managers. I mean, now with the new law that passed in California, you kind of have to do that. Otherwise, you as the brand can be held liable if it comes out that the factory you're working with is not above board and not paying their workers, you know, a fair wage.
Yeah, California has also released like an anti-greenwashing law. I mean, you know, yeah, a lot of our sustainability laws come from California first. So thank God for that. But, you know, you brought up a very good point there, too, of a lot of times when I'm working with my own clients, they're constantly saying, like, well, what question should I be asking about this type of certification? What question should I be asking about this material? And, you know, sometimes we'll get certifications back that I have to check, and sometimes they're fake and sometimes they're not. And it's very like stressful for people that aren't working in sustainability. And these are, I mean, we're talking about like designers right now. Like they don't have a background in this. So what questions would you suggest for someone who maybe is meeting these factories and kind of getting acquainted with all this? And I'm sure this is all in your course, but what questions would you even say are the most important to ask?
Yeah, this is definitely some of the things we go over in the program. I always say like, and I know this is uncomfortable for so many people, nobody likes to ask about money, but if your factory is proud of the wages they are paying their sewers and the workers, they will tell you and you can ask. I know specifically like a factory in Massachusetts, who pay their workers above minimum wage, and they are very excited to tell potential clients that. So I think, you know, not being afraid to ask maybe those like taboo or maybe, you know, like tricky questions. Again, going into the factory, seeing like, all right, are there exits and like open window? I mean, basic stuff, which you cannot take for granted in the garment industry. Are there clear walkways where people could get out of the building quickly if they needed to? Talking to the sewers, how do they seem? Like, are there people on lunch break? Are there people taking coffee breaks? Are there people talking to each other? And, you know, just getting a vibe and an energy for the work will, again, if you're there in person, will really, really help.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of like a story. I think it was in a book that I read that was about a factory that Nike used. And like, you can have all these policies posted on the wall, but actually implementing them was a completely different story. And like, your factory workers will, they're not going to like look for other jobs if they're, I mean, and like the job market is so interesting now anyway, but you know, creating like a safe environment for people to work and to be supported, no matter what, whether you're working in a factory or not, is just really important. And I think you do, as soon as you walk into a place, you get that sense.
Yeah. And I think like this also reminds me, like just back when I was starting my brand, and just in terms of, you know, there's all that I already said, and you already said, but also kind of like getting the sewers, the workers to buy into what you're doing in terms of just like camaraderie, morale. I remember when we were featured in the New York Times, we flew to our factory in North Carolina. We were living in Austin and Colorado, my co-founder, and we flew there and we like brought in physical, like the paper, we brought in the article, and we went around the factory. We showed them, we showed the pictures of the garments they were making, and how we talked about the sewers, the factory we were working with in North Carolina in the article. So I think one other time, like we brought them cookies, like it. So it's just like they're people, and that is going to make you more successful as a brand when you think of like the whole collaborative system around your supply chain.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that, because I was on a call earlier and we were talking about sustainability and like positive feedback, and just like, we don't get rewarded at work a lot. Like, we don't get a good job at work a lot. And it's like, we're all humans. We all like to be told good job, and sustainability is a huge part of that, of like just feeling good about what we're doing. And especially when you're starting a brand, you're up against a lot of challenges, like so many challenges. You're just like fighting every day to like figure out. So like, even having that like good moment of what you can like give someone else, like a pat on the back, like I always feel really good when I can help someone else. And so kind of in that same thread. But I'm curious, you know, as I said, you're kind of up against so many challenges. What do you think is like the number one mistake a lot of these new entrepreneurs make when they're developing their fashion brand?
Oh man, like from what category? From like the sustainability category, from the marketing category, from the raising money, from sustainability?
All the above. I mean,
okay. I know. It's like, where do I start? Okay. Well, one thing is, and this is another thing that I say very early on to my entrepreneurs in Factory 45. There's no such thing as perfectly sustainable. Anytime you're trying to create something new, it has an impact. So our goal is to reduce that impact, reduce the footprint that our product makes as much as we possibly can without sacrificing the product itself. So we cannot let go of fit, functionality, drape, durability for the sake of sustainability. Otherwise, you just have a perfectly sustainable garment that sits in someone's closet or gets immediately donated to Goodwill or ends up in a landfill. So I think that's one of the things. I remember starting my brand. Oh my gosh, we were such purists. Like, we wanted everything to be perfect, like down to like these gorgeous, like unfinished natural wood buttons that cost like another $2 to our cost of goods sold. Like just so, just very funny things looking back where I'm like, oh man, did we really need to do that? But I think just remembering that your goal is to do things as best you can from the beginning. And then as you grow as a brand, as you get customer feedback, you can implement and make changes along the way to improve.
I think that's the cost of goods sold or like with the pricing. I mean, that's like really important. Like all those little things add up, especially when it comes to material. And sometimes sustainable materials can cost 25, 50, 75% more than a conventional product. You got to like bake that all in. It's hard, but you know, speaking of that, and obviously the evolution of what you've created, and I'm sure there's been a lot of different businesses that have gone through your program. What have been some of like the most interesting sustainable innovations or even just programs that you've kind of seen from your entrepreneurs that went through Factory 45?
I guess the first one that comes to mind immediately, because she's one of our alumni mentors, is Lottie, L-O-T-I is the name of the brand. She is upcycling new, like just very like LA fashion forward, gorgeous garments from old, like button up dress shirts and, just like men's clothing. And it's all upcycled and remnant fabric. So that's been really cool. She's using all fabric that would otherwise be discarded. Another one I remember from just the beginning, Veda, which is another one of our alumni. She graduated from the program in 2016, but she's one of the bigger brands to, it's V-E-T-T-A. And she's worked with a family-owned factory in New York since the beginning. I mean, they're doing amazing things with like knits and just natural fibers. I think that's a lot of it is just figuring out what we can do with already existing materials, right? Because the more we can reduce the impact of clothing going into landfills, I think right now we just have such a landfill problem. I think those are the projects that I'm most excited about.
That's so cool. I'm gonna have to check out those brands. And like, oh gosh, using existing materials. I think that there's like a really strong upcycling trend, like moving into 2022, 2023, like people are looking for that actually. Like even, I just had a lot of calls today, but there was even a really cool graphic designer who's using upcycling as part of her branding, but it's for, you know, for website design. And like, I thought that was just like really cool. How she's utilizing it and taking her professional recycling habits and translating them. But, you know, as I said, I think upcycling is a huge trend. I think secondhand is a huge trend. What are some other big trends that you're seeing in the fashion world, sustainable fashion world, that people can kind of maybe get inspiration from?
On-demand manufacturing is becoming very, I think like Stella McCartney and some of those bigger brands are starting to talk about on-demand manufacturing. So that's when basically you don't create the product until someone orders it, until your customer orders it. So it's kind of like made to order, but it's not custom. And it's just in terms of not creating inventory that you don't know will sell or will end up just sitting in a warehouse, from a sustainability standpoint and just from like smart business principles, like not having to invest all of this money in a production run you don't know is going to sell. I think that's very exciting. And also just, I guess, selfishly, that's what I've been teaching since 2014, since when I did my own Kickstarter and we pre-sold everything. And that is the launch strategy that I teach my entrepreneurs so that they're not only reducing their own financial risk, but they're also testing the market before they create something they don't know is going to sell. So I think those two things hand in hand, pre-selling and on-demand manufacturing, I think we're going to see even more of.
Yeah, Yeah. Pre-selling makes total sense too, because you can kind of know exactly how much material you need. You can, you know,
sizing, like all the things that you're like, oh, I don't know. How many mediums should I order? Like how many larges? Like, oh, well, you know, because your customer told you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much easier.
With on-demand manufacturing, which I've actually only heard of when it comes to books, because I know some people do that with publications. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of curious, when it comes to waste, is it more or less wasteful to make things individually because of excess fabric, or kind of what happens there? I actually don't know. That's what I'm just asking.
I think, and I do not know a whole lot about the waste part of this either, but I think that the cutting is very similar. So like you would cut the same, the cutter would lay out the, you know, what they're going to cut, and then they would just do it the same way and they save the fabric that they've already cut. I'm trying to think of like what other waste factors there would be. I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Yeah. And even like when you have all that waste fabric, I know that some companies are trying to utilize like, okay, now we have all this waste fabric from this previous product. Now what can we make with this waste fabric? And then even that, I mean, that, and that's really cool too, but again, maybe you have to do a pre-order to know exactly if people are even interested in it. That could be really cool to even basically make a zero waste system.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of brands doing that. Like they'll make like little clutches, or now they'll make masks or bow ties, whatever it is. I like on-demand manufacturing. I like even more the bulk pre-sale, because you're not, it's not one-offs. It's like you're getting an order of, let's say, 500 units up front, and you know you're going to go into production with that amount. But then to transition to on-demand from there, we've had brands do that. Like they'll do a big launch, few hundred units, and then they'll transition to pre-selling, you know, for one-offs or more on-demand. So I think it can work kind of hand in hand.
Okay, cool. And are you seeing like with COVID and people sort of reassessing their lives and their strategies for just anything that they're doing, their careers especially, are you seeing like a massive increase in people starting their own brands and companies, or are you seeing more fear towards starting something new?
I would say, so 2020 was our biggest year. So that's like a benchmark for, you know, I'm seeing all the people who want to go and start their own brands who come into my program. So 2020 was a big year. 2021 was pretty big too so I think people are kind of ready, and it's not so much like, you know, there are people who quit their jobs completely. I sort of discourage against that. I say, keep your job, use this as your side hustle, your creative outlet, so that you're not stressed about money. You don't want to be stressed about paying your bills just to like keep a roof over your head while you're starting your business. Some people have to just like go all in, you know, burn it all down so they can build it back up. But for the most part, I think people who are a little bit more risk averse, most of my entrepreneurs are simultaneously building their brands while working a full-time job. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like I said, I encourage that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That fear of like, oh my God, am I going to be successful? Is this going to work? Like, can sometimes totally like stifle your growth and your creativity and just your ability to like think big, because you're held back. Like, and like, that's like what I talk about with climate change. Like, how are we going to think of solutions that are actually impactful and exciting and fun when we're just terrified like all the time?
Yeah. And just the pressure, you know, again, like you do not want to put the pressure of like being able to pay your rent or your mortgage on this new business that you're trying to launch. So like, don't put yourself in that position where it's going to be like make or break. Whereas like if you go slow and organic and you have a separate income stream, you can kind of sustainably grow the business to a place where maybe you can eventually quit your job.
Yeah. And to kind of round out our chat, you know, do you still have that capsule wardrobe now? I always found capsule wardrobes to be like very hard especially when you live in a place with so many seasons.
But it's funny. So I didn't even like get to this point of the story. We didn't even end up launching a capsule wardrobe. We ended up simplifying and launching one piece that could be worn 30 different ways, which is like a whole other entrepreneurial lesson that I talk about all the time. And we don't necessarily need to get into, but the short version is, entrepreneurs, if you're listening and you have an idea, the answer is almost always simplify. You do not need to launch a 12-piece collection. You don't even need to launch a 7-piece collection. You can launch with one signature piece. You can launch with 3 to 5 pieces. But yes, simplifying was very, very crucial in our success.
Yeah, I had a business mentor who was like, you're just trying to do too much. Like, just calm down. But I do think like we all have kind of grown up in this era of like, we have to do everything and be everything because we have to be well-rounded. But I think we've all learned as we've gotten older, like being in a niche is actually a little more valuable because we actually know what we're talking about.
One of the best, I went to a conference very early on in my entrepreneurial career. I think I was like 23 or 24. And one of the best talks at that conference was about how you don't need to be passionate about something. It was basically like, millennials, don't try to do something you're passionate about. Niche down, like find something very specific that you can get good at and are interested in and pursue that. So I think exactly what you said, just like, you know, find your niche and pursue that.
Yeah. And sustainability can kind of be in any topic, whether it's fashion, whether it's cars, whether it's this. So I think that there's so many opportunities for people. And I'm excited that people can actually go on to factory45.co, check out the classes that are available, get involved. If this is something that you've been kind of going on the fence about, check out Shannon's classes because I think they're great. And there's just like a lot of really useful tools. I signed up for your email list, and there's great blogs and resources. Like, you've been doing this for a while. So there's a lot of lessons here. And I would say, you know, I always ask my guests this one question at the end of the conversation, because as you said from the very beginning, like nothing can be perfectly sustainable. We have to kind of just do our best, make things work. As someone who kind of works in this industry, you've traveled the world. I'm assuming you have like some passion towards the environment. You probably recycle.
Bare minimum, you probably recycle. Yes.
Well, I mean, you start it and you're trying to help people become more sustainable. What is something that makes you kind of feel like a sustainability hypocrite? Because we can't be perfect. We can't be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's things like, my friend delivered me this coffee because I've been bedridden from my COVID booster. Like yesterday, I was like, I can't cancel this call with Shannon because I was like,
dead. It was so hard to get us on.
Yes. And I was like, I will do whatever it takes. But I was literally in bed all day yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But
so yeah, I know. Well, so that's the thing. Yes. One thing that like immediately comes to mind is we are vegan at home and vegetarian when we go out to eat. And then, you know, 100% vegans hear that and they're like, oh, she's judging. But really like, yeah, I feel guilty when I eat cheese and dairy, and because I know like animal agriculture is a huge environmental impact, but it's also very hard to go out to eat and not eat cheese and dairy or even have butter be hidden in a meal that you think is vegan. So I think the food stuff, my husband is also just like very into eating sustainably and organic, and you know, we don't eat meat. Our son doesn't eat meat. That's the biggest thing for us. But then also like travel, that's a huge carbon footprint. Getting on a plane, we love to travel. It's a little bit different now with COVID, but that is definitely something that you kind of make, you know, consolations, and you say, okay, you know, this is something that, yeah, it's not great for the environment, but maybe it's important for my happiness and productivity to do other things that are going to have a positive, sustainable impact.
And travel is part of inspiration because you kind of need to go to other places, like see what other people are doing. And then you get ideas from that. And
I think about like, what if I hadn't traveled after college, you know, like I wouldn't have been open to this world of entrepreneurship. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So yeah, I totally agree.
And your comment about food, I could not possibly like agree more with that. Like, cause I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't have dairy anyway, but I'm generally vegan. And I was actually telling my boyfriend recently, I'm like, I'm so, food is not a reward to me. Like, it's like cause it's so
means
hard.
To an end.
It's a means to an end. I don't like cooking. It's so difficult actually to be vegan and even vegetarian sometimes, that I'm just like, I just need to get by. I'll just have a veggie burger. That's all I got. It's like a lonely plate. But that's funny. And that's the first time I've heard that one, actually being vegan at home and vegetarian out, because you're right. It is really, really hard to eat out and actually have options. Cause you would be surprised at how many people are like, milk is dairy. What? Butter is dairy. Like, hello, did anyone not see the food pyramid when we were growing up? I don't know.
It's funny listening to my son, because he will like very much decipher like, oh, that's cow's milk. Like, oh, that's oat milk. That's pea milk. And like, as a kid, it was just milk. Like, I didn't know where it came from.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Well, Shannon, I've had such a fun time chatting with you, and this has been like very eye-opening, especially because, you know, the fashion industry, there's so much opportunity for change. And I think that what Factory 45 is a great opportunity for people to learn more about becoming more sustainable with their brands. So everyone should go check it out. Is there any like, you know, a piece of advice that you could give entrepreneurs? And I know you said before, focus on one thing, but any other advice to give to people that are either starting their sustainability journey or starting a business?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. This has been very fun to talk to you. I would say my ending note would be to anyone, start before you're ready, no matter what it is, like entrepreneurship, a side hustle, switching careers, just start before you're ready, because you will be sad tomorrow that you didn't start yesterday. And I think that it takes us all longer to do what we want to do or to reach some of those goals because of fear and procrastination and imposter syndrome and all the things that we as humans deal with. So start today, start before you're ready. You'll never feel ready. And just take the next right step. Not to quote Frozen 2, which I can't believe I just did on a podcast. I have a 3-year-old.
Oh, that was hilarious. And honestly, Google exists for a reason. Use it. Like, I feel like I've Googled so much during my business. How do I write a business plan? How do I do this? Like, yeah, like you said, start before you're ready. We have so many resources at our fingertips. And so many amazing people around us to utilize as a piece of information as we get started. So I could not agree more. And everyone should definitely go check out your website, factory45.co, and just get started.
That's right. Thanks so much for having me, Sarah.
Thanks, Shannon. Have a great rest of your day.